Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the very first live podcast taping of the Medical Sisterhood. I am very privileged to be here with our two guests, Dr. Latanya Benjamin and Dr. Lindsay Ackerman, and we have a wealth of, we have a wonderful audience here with us today as well for the live taping, dermatologists as well as dermatology residents, all of which eager to kind of be a part of this medical sisterhood journey that we've started. So I'm going to turn it over to our guests. I know that we know each other very well, but Lindsay, why don't you just start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself and your journey through dermatology?
Wow. I'm a complex medical dermatologist. I still think I 100% know that I have the best job in the whole world for me. I love what I do. I get to do a breadth of complex med derm. I treat kids and adults and everything in between, men and women, inpatient, outpatient. We do a lot of clinical research in my practice, and really, if I kind of think back to just even thinking through building a practice, I started this practice in 2008 when it was just kind of an idea in my mind. I really couldn't have contemplated it ever becoming so fulfilling. So it's a huge privilege to be here today because community and networking and mentorship has been an enormous part of my career success and the fulfillment that I get in the work that I get to do. So there's a lot to me that's, you know, fulfillment coming from the work I do, but outside of those four walls there's so much fulfillment that comes from who I do it with in the indirect space.
I love that. And Latanya, how about your journey to get here?
Sure. I'm a pediatric dermatologist. I began my journey thinking I was going to be a pediatrician. I knew my entire life was going to be devoted to the care of children. And then the light bulb went off and I did my first clinic. It was a peds derm clinic. And that's when the sparks went. And I recalibrated, initially matching in a categorical pediatric residency. I then went on to do a second residency in dermatology, fellowship at Northwestern, and ultimately my first job as a professor at Stanford teaching. And majority of my life had been in academia. And then a little thing called COVID happened. So when I was home, basically backed into private practice for the first time, and only marketing solely to take care of children as a pediatric dermatologist. Now my practice is evolving organically and beautifully where the moms are asking me to care for them and kind of introducing them to basic skincare. So I'm not heavy in cosmetics, but heavy in skincare. And I take care of both moms and babies. So that's where I'm at now.
I love that. And as a new mom, that really resonates with me. That whole going to the same person to treat the whole family. Now, I know, Latanya, you are stepping down as the president of the Women's Derm Society. Can I get a clap in the audience here?
Thank you.
So that's quite an achievement. I think all of us in dermatology, we have had the Women's Derm Society touch us to one degree or another. And just such amazing leaders have been a part of that organization. So for you, what was that light bulb moment when you decided, you know what, this is a leadership role I want to embark on?
So here's a funny story. I had no aspirations to be the president at all. It's one of those things where I know in dermatology or even in medicine, we're always, you know, we know the steps, right? 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, your fellowship is this long, everything is mapped out, and we're planners by nature. I think most of us are high achieving, A kind of folks. And this was one where I was just organically been involved with WDS, enjoying the camaraderie, the fellowship, the women I would never meet outside of being what I call like my peds derm silo. Like it's just a real small subset of us. And so I have my exposure to Mohs, surgeons and pathologists. And anyway, I was just really becoming involved. Anything you do in life, they say what you put in, you get out. And so I was really just very active in service and really enjoying my time. And years have passed and didn't realize that because time passes when you're having fun. And again, through sisterhood, someone said, you know, you should go for vice president and then you should go for president-elect, you know, things like that. And it just happened organically. And it's the one time in life, sometimes you get those sweet surprises when you're not planning.
Anything about...
Yeah. For sure. For sure.
Has anything about the journey over the last year surprised you?
I really didn't realize how much behind the scenes. Well, I knew there's going to be a lot of work. but I didn't realize how much behind the scenes I would get to know the membership. Life is tough. People are going through things. And, you know, when you have people on your board or you have people in your executive committee or you're running programs and you're running this large organization, I didn't realize when people reach out to you and say, well, I'm suffering with this, or I'm getting a divorce, or I can't make this meeting, I'm so sorry, because of X, Y, and Z reasons, I didn't realize how much is involved behind the scenes with the people when you really care about who you're leading. I've been really touched through the year.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because the first time you and I had interacted, because I'd always seen you on the stage, but we had the opportunity to chat one-on-one at a meeting last year. And I just felt that connection where I could share anything with you. And I think that's just your personality, where you do care. You genuinely care about your membership. You care about the individuals you speak to. And it's just something about your personality allows for everyone else to open up to you. And you feel that sisterhood bond. That's why I thought you'd be perfect for tonight, because I felt that myself last year, and I had just found out that I was pregnant. I wasn't really telling anybody. I was keeping it on the down low, but you were one of the first people that I felt comfortable telling.
I was honored. So she did share.
Yeah. Like, you got it out of me somehow.
You were glowing. You were glowing.
Now, Lindsay, I know the side of you where you practice a lot of medicine and you see patients in the trenches, but you've kind of turned that into a passion project recently, right? So do you want to kind of tell our audience about what is on the horizon?
Thank you for asking. It's such a privilege to actually be able to talk about it. It's been a long endeavor. A few years ago, I decided that I was going to sort of do one of those things, if not me, who, if not now, when. And I developed a small production company called Skintelligent Productions. And the idea is, thank you, I think... there is so much that we do and so many ways that medical dermatology actually can be exposed for really what it is. And I'm a Big Ten person. I'm a huge fan of everything dermatology. Like I said, I love my job. But the skin, when read by medical dermatologists, pediatric dermatologists, you know, based on size and shape and color and distribution, can be an enormous window into what otherwise is going on inside the body. And so I want to tell those stories. And so I decided, in developing this production company, I would bring a filmmaker into the hospital if a patient would so let me, and we would do the discovery process. And from there, we have been able to film a tremendous amount of content. I'm incredibly grateful to the patients that have given me the privilege to do this. And actually, the moment that it became incredibly clear to me that this was a must was when I actually realized that the first several patients I approached about telling their stories. I mean, here are patients in an incredibly vulnerable place. They're hospitalized with skin disease that nobody knows what's going on. They're sick as can be. And, you know, here I'm like, oh, and would you like to tell this on camera with some lights? I'll bring my filmmaker and we'll get a mic on you. And what was so remarkable, this was actually early 2021. And every single patient I approached, and the whole hesitation I'd had for years on this idea was I didn't want to make someone that was already very vulnerable feel more vulnerable. But every single patient in sequence that I approached said, oh my gosh, if I can help another person not go through this, if I can help another doctor know what this is, I want to help. And if anyone remembers, in the early part of 2021, we were also going through the COVID pandemic, and there was not a lot of humanity on display in the public eye, right? So to me, this was a moment of pause, and it was kind of an if not now, when, if not me, who? And so my aim is to ultimately change the dialogue and to help patients far and wide, and actually help change the perception of dermatology by those who make the rules we have to play by, right? By the payers, by the legislators. I want them to know that we are important in the house of medicine, and that we have patients that have really consequential diseases. Skin can tell a story.
So I love that. That's an amazing highlight reel for Lindsay, but I know that it wasn't all sunshine and roses. So tell me a little about the behind the scenes of bringing this to life, and what struggles, what challenges did you face?
Yeah, well, no one really needs to know how the sausage is written. So I think women in medicine recognize many times that sometimes I think we are, maybe asked to stay in a lane for underestimated. One of my favorite quotes is the quote from Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman, big mistake. So, and I think, you know, we are accustomed, I think many of us, to recognizing that there is no lane for us. That if you are, you know, enamored by or impassioned by something that drives you, you can do whatever it is you really believe is necessary. You know, so from that perspective, I think I kind of overcame the hurdle of, oh, you don't really want to do that, or really, do you want to do that? I've had a tremendous amount of support. I have to say, I have an incredible wife who's been very generous with resources. So, and maybe the biggest hurdle really is the financial. You learn a lot. It's expensive to produce video content.
Not a look at their number, right?
But it's just been, it's so meaningful. And so, you know, I have to say, one of the things that I think has been a pillar of many of my successes is I don't think that I look at challenges as though I want a way out. I want to know that I can sail. I want to know I can steer the boat. And so whatever wind comes my way, I'm going to be okay. And so that's kind of how I've approached the challenges that have, you know, come before me. There's always something, right? There's always something that's unexpected when you're on a new journey. It's learning. It's okay.
Well, and I think that's a really good point, that it's okay for us to face those challenges, but we have to remember that we can overcome them and you just keep trying. And Latanya, I'm going to turn it back to you, because as WDS president, I'm sure there were a lot of times where you could offer other women opportunities and just help them in their career. Were there any moments that resonated with you where you could help them overcome these challenges?
Many. Behind the scenes, like I mentioned, I would get unsolicited phone calls where this is going on in my life and I don't know how to handle it. I need professional help. And then so I would take it back to my board and say, we need to create a pathway so people can reach out to us, like ASAP mentorship, like on the spot, right? That have no skin in the game. And they're really going to give you advice that is for you and only you, right? And there have been a lot of moments. What I enjoyed the most this year was absolutely focusing on membership and the members and what they want WDS to be like, feel like, remember how it used to be, how, where we want it to go. And so in listening to them, I was able to do some unique things, kind of put my neck out a lot for them. And I loved it because the return was great. Even things like bringing up mental health in the forum space and going for a keynote speaker that they've never kind of, you know, I've got a $2 million plus budget to run, right? And so there's still restraints that you respect, but then kind of, hey, flexing, I can fundraise and get a little bit to this, to do that. And, you know, and so all of that was driven by the voices of the members and what they really wanted out of it. And I'm really proud of that.
And I think one thing that we sometimes have to realize is when you're still first starting out in your career, you might think that, okay, well, I need to go through these challenges, but I'm going to get to a point in my career where I don't have to worry about being looked at differently, or I don't have to try as hard. And I think all three of us can attest to the fact that no matter where you are in your career, you still need to work a little bit harder, be a little bit louder. And are there still moments that that happens in your day-to-day careers?
I mean, I vividly remember just a couple of days ago, I was in the office, and what's striking to me is actually, I think in times of... the right word would be just total disrespect. I mean, I don't have a better descriptive of it. You know, we actually in some way are probably so used to just utilizing our diplomacy, our appropriateness, and putting people back in place that may be mistreating you because you're actually doing it right. And I was on the phone call. I was on a phone call with a urologist about a mutual patient that I had been reaching out to over time because... I'll just say, I shouldn't cut this, but like the patient was being totally mismanaged. And and I had reached out to him. He was finally returning the call. And I mean, I picked up the phone and he basically started yelling at me. And I was like, I'm sorry, mate. I had reached out to you to ask a question. May I speak? I'm not done speaking to you. I mean, it was like, well, I don't even know what you're yelling at me about. I didn't even ask my question. Anyway, so I would say, I'm a very big tent person. I love working with my male colleagues, but there are moments that we face that are different as women in medicine that challenge us probably uniquely. And we have adapted and grown and accustomed ourselves to understanding what our role is in that moment. And I think it's to level the playing field right out by you know, diffusing a situation because you're handling it, frankly, much more appropriate than your compatriot. But I do think you're right. There are times where, you know, you may think, oh, I'm going to rest at one point, or I'm going to not have to deal with this anymore, or it's going to change.
That's when the hate turns up.
Yeah, right. The moment you're like, okay, I'll put it back a little bit. Oh, no.
And the things we get used to, I mean, my staff were standing. They could hear him through my cell phone, you know, several feet away. And when I finally turned to look at them, they were aghast. And I was like, I'm sorry, sir. You know, I mean, I was very together with it because we've just become used to it. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, it's kind of sad in some ways, but it's also empowering to know. Doesn't faze me.
Yeah, I love that. I would say for me, someone once said that when you're in private practice, you learn a lot about yourself, and you do, right? You'll learn your strengths and your weaknesses, but also when you take a leadership position, you kind of come in with a wherewithal, or at least you should, where your strengths and weaknesses are. Like, for example, one of my superpowers is I love kind of unity and camaraderie and consensus building. I'm not like a dictator, but boy, I've learned to dictate sometimes, you know, like you have to step outside the box and stretch and grow a little bit when you're in leadership roles. And I would akin that to motherhood. You know, motherhood, it's so easy to kind of default to that nurturing and that giver. Then at some point when your boundaries are stepped across, you kind of have, I know you're my child and I love you more than anything, life itself, but like, hey, where am I in this? And maybe that's a mom that says for the first time, I need self-care, or you know what I mean? Or I need to go to the spa for a weekend and I need to take a break from this. At some point, you kind of go outside what's your norm, your comfort level. And so through this experience as leadership, I realized, you know, where your boundaries are and you push it a little bit. But when people cross over it, like I really learned what I do best in clinic, which is advocacy. I'm great at, you know, advocacy for children. So that extends to advocating for women. And this was the time I'm like, I'm advocating for my passions here. I'm in this leadership role for a reason. And I just felt like, just, I need to right some wrongs. And, you know, and then that just kind of gave this strength that I didn't know I had, or, you know, to kind of be in a position of influence where you can make good and the better changes. And so when you step up to that, you got to do stuff that you're not necessarily used to or accustomed to. Mm-hmm. But the reward is really sweet when you realize like, wow, I did that, you know, but you got to follow that passion, obviously, right? No one can do that for you. Well, I love that thought of going outside the box, because I had a mentor once tell me that you're never going to grow if you don't feel uncomfortable at times. And that's a great testament to, because sometimes I feel like as a woman, we're always told that we should feel privileged to just be given the opportunity. Don't negotiate your contract, because what if they take it away from you? But the reality is, it's okay to push back a little bit and do so graciously. And I think we've learned how to do that. I actually remember an ad board that you and I were on. We were the only two women out of a group of, I think there was probably 19 to 20 men there. And
oh, wow.
We were, yeah, it was, I was very surprised the number of women. I couldn't find like more women, but either way. And we were conversing and you brought up a really good point. And then maybe 2-3 minutes later, a male colleague brought up that same point. And then the moderator was like, well, yeah, that's really a good point. And I remember saying, yeah, it was a good point when Lindsay brought it up 2 minutes ago. But I would have never felt empowered to do that. And I did it in a very joking way. But I think we also have to remember that it may not just be on us to put that power forward. When you see something happening to a female colleague of yours, it's okay to step in there and help. Because sometimes like, when you have that extra support, it makes you feel like, all right, I got this. It's okay. You laughed. I laughed.
I think one of the most beautiful things about and what we're doing right now with the sisterhood is women are always on the ready, it seems, to mentor, to embrace, to advocate. I mean, the work, you know, I do other extracurricular things and I delegate on behalf of AAD to the AMA. And there's so much advocacy that can be done in so many different places. And along the way, I have found that it's been other women on the ready who are embracing, unifying, you know, offering to help, recognizing where your challenges are. It's such a wonderful, wonderful thing. And so to anyone who may be listening, I would say, don't ever hesitate to reach out to another woman. I think it's a little bit of a misnomer that, you know, there's some power grab out there. I see it very differently. I think we generally want the water to rise and all boats will, you know.
And that, to your point also, one of the smartest things I did was actually turning to my colleagues that were better in certain skill sets. And being part of the team, learning from them, you know, just because you have a present title doesn't mean you know everything or can, you know, this any title, mother, anything. And so there are women that I admire. And it's like, wow, how did she do that? Or there are people that just feel like they own their space already, you know? And so as I'm trying to develop that space in me, I look to others and say, wow, like, how did they do it? How did they approach it? And it gave me a little bit more fire, like, okay, because some people can do things and get away with it. And other people can't.
Stay somewhat in the comfort zone.
Yeah. So, but it's that like permission, like give yourself permission to try a little bit and emulate where you want to be, where you want to go, you know? And it taught me this year to stop asking permission so much. It's like, that's your role. Like you have every right. Stop asking permission to go for it. Do it.
I love
that. And when you see that in other people, that's inspiring. At least I was inspired. So I use the folks around me to also inspire me to be greater than I thought I could be. And it's really
good. Out of the comfort zone is a big one. It really is. I mean, it really is. And the whole Skintelligent thing, this, you know, thought process that I had years ago about it, what would be necessary to put out there. I wasn't even going to be on the camera. Like, this was not about, it wasn't what I wanted. It was about them. It was totally about them. And then I was told, oh, no, they have to have a, you know, someone has to be the person. that really stretched my boundaries. I mean, really. And it still does. But again, when you're enamored by or compelled by something, it's good to get out of your comfort zone. You learn, you grow.
And you feel better for it. Like when you've created something and you got out of your comfort zone, it's as if, wow, I did that. This is an accomplishment of mine. And that's actually everything that we just talked about was why the medical sisterhood was created about a year ago. So I'll tell our audiences, because I think some of them might not know the story, but it was a year ago at the Academy meeting last year where we were in a random studio in San Diego having a conversation about we need a place, a network for women to be able to reach out to different people, hear about real stories and the things that really matter to them. Because at that time, I was newly pregnant, trying to navigate some of the hardships. And I kept tapping into my friends, but not all of them had the answers I was looking for. And I'm like, well, if I'm looking for answers, what if other people are? And the Woman Derm Society, it's a great institution, but you don't necessarily have those questions being answered in an on-demand fashion. So I was like, you know what? Let's just start a podcast. And HCP Live was great to partner with me at the time. And it just spiraled into something that I think a lot of individuals are realizing that they need. And I'm hoping that everybody here today will take that as something to go home with and say, you know what? I just need to tap into one resource, help expand this network. And if you guys have someone you can help, just help them, pay it forward. That's what I've always said, because anytime a mentee tells me, hey, how can I repay you? I'm like, just if you have the same opportunity, do it for somebody else. That's the biggest thing that you could do for me at that point.
Well, kudos for you for starting this, because it's definitely a need. And as you go around, I've had the privilege of, you know, as a distinguished professor invited to lectureships and speaking around the country. And, you know, there's a lot of people that have situations that they need a friendly ear for. And not of all of them are the best situations to be in. And so it's really nice to know as a professional woman that can understand the path of a dermatologist and the path of perhaps going through residency and then just all various stages of our career to have a sounding board. I think that's really helpful.
Well, I know we're coming to the end of our time. So if we could go back to 5 years ago when little Lindsay and little LaTanya were embarking on this next journey, do you guys have any feedback or final thoughts that you would give your younger self?
I'm going to let you go first, Nosy. gosh.
It's a growth thing. So it's this always evolving, and just be patient with yourself, you know, because just even what happened within this past year, from losing my mom to so many things, where I was last year to where I, at, if I used just the AAD as a marker to where I am today, there's so much transitions and growth. And, you know, and there's some years that there's expounded, like mine, because I had some, you know, things to go through. But then there are other years where it's a little quieter. And but it's an evolution, and it's a beautiful thing. And I think perhaps now it's almost when you get a moment, look back at where you've, you know, have someone in your life that reminds you where you used to be. You know, even like my father, you know, when I was going through medical school, like saying like, wow, if I heard a Dr. Benjamin was walking in the room, I would have thought it was a male, you know. And in his generation, we didn't have female doctors often. And like now look where we are. Like to us, it's like, oh, we're like more than the majority of the specialty, right? And so sometimes just that moment of pause to have a mile marker to look back, we are evolving, whether we realize it or not. There's an evolution that's happening. So,
yeah. So, in case you didn't know, I'm a type A kind of
person. No.
You know, and as a physician, you know, physician entrepreneur, I suppose, at this point in time, you know, we're used to statistics and metrics and predictive outcomes and things like that. And in the entrepreneurial space, again, when you're driven by something that's here, that you truly believe in, but it's the intangible at the moment, right? I think you have to be, I would tell myself, but from 5 years ago, I would tell myself to be prepared to kind of, along the same analogy with, you know, ride the wave. You should expect the unexpected. There'll be really high highs and really low lows, and that's okay. You know, eventually it'll level out again, but to stay the course. And you know, again, when you believe in something very deeply or you play something very hard, you know, as an athlete, I was trained, you play to the final whistle, and you don't play not to lose, you play to win. So that's part of my other, you know, motto is, you know, I'm in this because I know that this is a meaningful endeavor. And it's been incredibly fulfilling to see the feedback that I've gotten. Not every moment's been great, but I'm leveling out, and you know, we go up, we go down, but playing the final whistle.
Yeah, I love and stay the course. What you said, I mean, I think younger generations need that. Everything is instant gratification. If it's too hard, you know, I walk in a room, you know, they feel and they deserve the world. And so if they don't have the world without working, you know, they want to give up. And so I think that's a powerful message, because a lot of what we go through, people don't know how hard you work and what you're doing behind the scenes. And it's not, for the most part, the best things are not instant gratifications, just like your medical degree. I mean, it wasn't just like, I'm going to be a doctor and I'm going to go to medical school, and 2 days later you get a diploma. It doesn't work like that, right? So I think the best things in life are the ones that the grit, you got to grind and work it harder than you ever thought you could. But then you get out on the other side. And I think the younger generations, i.e. my 10-year-old daughter, what I'm trying to teach them, it's just not because, you know, you get upset because something, you know, you miss that game. And, you know, you got to keep going. You got to keep going.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, because it's like you said, when people look at you from the outside, like I'm sure our audience listening might think, well, they have everything together. Nobody sees your behind the scenes reel.
They don't need to.
Yeah, they don't need to. And actually, when I had my daughter, I cut back on all of my extracurriculars by 75%, because I was like, you know what? I need to find this new work-life balance. And my mom is like, you need to cut back. Like, you're working too much. I'm like, Mom, this is 25% of what I used to do. But they don't know, because they just see what's happening in the background. You know what you're doing. And as long as it satisfies you, that's what matters. But again, it's important to stay the course, because there is a lot of work that goes into achieving your goals, and it may very well be worth it, but no one's just handed everything on a silver platter. And if they are, I wonder who that person is.
You're exactly right. Even going into this presidency role, even other presidents didn't understand why I did this, but I actually gave up my role as a professor teaching at my institution, because I was like, there's big changes that need to happen and I need to be on demand. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that personal sacrifice. I was up for promotion to be a professor. And no one can understand it, and that's okay. But for me, that was my conviction, if I'm going to go in this. And then I have my father, who now lives with me since my mom passed. He's in the house, and he's seen, you know, from 8 a.m., have not left the desk.
Yeah.
And because of West Coast time, you're running meetings till 11 p.m. at night, mm-hmm. and asking, why are you doing this? And then the thing is, well, you can't say because you're getting paid, because this is all volunteer activity.
Exactly.
So that's a crazy part of it. So like, you're volunteering to do this.
Yeah.
And so to your points, it's just, it has to be in here and you lead with that. And there's a lot behind the scenes that people won't see and they don't need to see. And we do what we do because we want to do it. And yeah.
I think we're all very similar in that yeah. way. And I'm sure a lot of our audience is too.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not type A at all. Yeah. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to thank everybody. Did you have any final thoughts?
No, a quote came to mind just as you were
speaking. Please.
And it's, you know, one of my favorite quotes is, opportunity, you will always miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And so I think for all of us and for those that we are speaking to or that we're engaged enough to want to tune in, it's something to think about, because I think all of us are driven very much by things that are the intangible, by the passion, by the feel, by the know-how. And that's why we don't necessarily stay in our lane.
Yeah.
You know?
I think one last thing that I've really found that it's important to me now on the other side of my career, as I was a junior and listening to advice like you all are and trying to kind of evolve and grow personally, all the themes that came up for women was how to say no, how to say no. I actually think of it the other side. It's, what does it mean when you say yes? I'm thinking now, when you say yes, every time you say yes, you're saying no to other things.
Yes.
Right? So if I say yes to a meeting, I'm saying no to being with my child. I'm saying no to taking a jog. I'm saying no to, or you say yes to doing a talk. Well, what about all the work behind creating that presentation? And what about the time for travel? What about when you get back home and you have to do follow-ups? Or what about the W-9s and all this stuff? Yeah. That, you know, it's layers of collateral things that you're doing. So sometimes what I realize when we're searching for that balance in life, it's the yes is a quick yes often. For me, it's a lot of reflex. Like I say, yes, oh, yeah, that sounds great. But I don't remember all the things that go into that yes. So I would say, be careful with your yeses. It's not just all about saying no. Take opportunities. Go for it. I think it's wonderful. Just like today. Like, these are wonderful things, you know?
Well, and you guys all said yes when you could have said no.
Exactly. So being here, you're saying no to other things, but then follow your passions. This is, you're here for a reason, right? And this will serve you. That's our, you know, our hope. This is going to serve you. But I think what I'm learning now, it's not just, oh, I have to say no, because then I feel robbed, because I enjoy these things. It's not about saying no. It's about, think about the whole picture when you say yes, what that means. Sometimes it just like makes you limit your yes.
Oh, it does. I just want to thank everybody for being here today. I want to thank HCP Live for producing this segment, and a special thank you to our sponsor, Johnson & Johnson, for helping us bring everybody here tonight. And to L'Oreal for providing some of the goodies in your swag bags, or trailblazer tote, as I like to call it.
Trailblazer. Oh,
I wish it was hot pink, but
beggars can't be choosers. Nice.
But thank you all again. And tune in to the Medical Sisterhood to hear other podcasts, and tune in for any live activities that we'll have in the future. And remember, together, we've got this. Yay.